Hello, Gems. Welcome to another episode of TRs in Tech. I'm your host, Shelley Benhoff, and today I'm talking to Rachel Berger, and she is the Director of Marketing at Allstax. We talked about her experience attending a women's college, how to support women who want to have children, and the systemic issues facing us in the workplace. Without further ado, on to the episode. Hey, Rachel, welcome to the show. I'm so glad you're here.
I'm so glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's just jump right in and have you tell us your tech story.
Sure. I started with a very checklist life. So I was like, I'm going to graduate high school. I'm going to go to college. After college with my 4.0 GPA, I'm going to become a lawyer, and that's going to be my life. And I did go to college. I did not have a 4.0. And it was like 2011, which wasn't a great time to enter the market. So I decided to go to grad school, and I'm like, okay, maybe not a lawyer, maybe a consultant. And after finishing grad school, I did get into consulting, and I was about 5 months in, and I was looking at my life, you know, I'm going to be here for 35, 40, 45 years. Am I really going to be sitting down looking at spreadsheets and reports and talking to these financial guys who I don't care about whatsoever for the rest of my life to make a good paycheck? And I just couldn't handle it. I said I wanted to become a writer. And so I kind of fell into tech in the sense that it being 2013 or so, content writing for tech was a new industry. We called it blogging at the time. And I was really lucky that a local company called Capterra, which is really big now, but it wasn't then, was hiring for content writers. So I got this job and I learned all about software and how to talk about software and what this SaaS thing was and how huge the industry was. And I got really lucky because I hit the market just at a time when SEO became a word that people knew, when finding software moved to an online process versus folks calling up and saying, hey, do you want our software? And some of my articles have been read by millions of people, and that kind of pushed me up my career, going from Capterra to Gartner to a place called Target Process, all the way to now where I'm at a place called Allstax as their director of marketing.
That's awesome. Yeah, that is quite the journey. I don't think I've ever had anybody on the show who was interested in law originally. I've had a lot of people in like history and physics, one of them, you know, and psych, like loads of women that studied psych and became, you know, devs actually, is really, really interesting. Yeah. So let's talk about, you and I have something in common, our passion for women's colleges.
Yes, that's right.
So, what was your experience actually attending a college where the learning environment was specifically women?
So I grew up in a really traditional New England, New Hampshire town. We had 10,000 people. I'm in the whole town. And I went to a co-ed high school, and one of the things about going to a women's college was that it unearthed a lot of biases that I actually had about myself and had about other women. So for example, in this very small town for math classes, there were the kids at the grade level that they were supposed to be at, let's say eighth grade. There were the kids a year ahead, and then there were the kids 2 years ahead, and that's how they tiered math. There was no honors or anything like that. And if you looked at the kids 2 years ahead, there were two women in that class. And the kids that were 1 year ahead, which is where I fell, it was 30% women. And then when it got to the normal grade level, it was split pretty 50-50. So being in this 1 year ahead, I was like, I'm doing pretty well for myself as a girl. And when I went to a women's college, you can't tier yourself in that way anymore because the top 10% of the class is women. And the bottom 50% of that class is women. And you realize really quickly that there's nothing really holding you back other than this perception of where you're supposed to place yourself in any area of studies. I had folks in neuroscience. I had folks in computer science, just outstripping all their peers. And their gender really didn't have anything to do with it. But I think you have to be in that kind of environment to realize that these boxes that you place yourself in are totally artificial. Mm-hmm. I think another big thing that I learned was that at a lot of traditional schools or co-ed schools, there's this emphasis on top-down mentorship. And I do think that's important. But at a women's college, there's a reinforcement of this importance of sisterhood and what is the importance of the people who are to the right and left of you, your peers. And so if we're, you know, going back to this math class, my mentors were the folks in the same class as me, the same age as me. They were just excelling and I was asking them for help versus a TA or the professor. So I learned to look side to side for help, which has really helped me with my career because I found that, yes, women will pull me up, but I'm also pushed up by the people beside me.
Yeah, I love that. Absolutely. Because, you know, when I was in school, I went to a school that previously was women only and had switched fairly recently to when I was in school in like 1998. But, you know, like the thing was, I was only one of five women in computer science. So, you know, I was talked over and I was told I was in the wrong class and stuff like that. And I was a straight A student, you know, so that's on them. But yeah, unconscious bias. Yeah, totally. Unconscious bias coming from a small town. I also came from a relatively small town in Maryland, actually. So, you know, I think we have similar experiences with being sheltered.
Yes.
Our childhood and then finding the big wide world and realizing all of this unconscious bias towards ourselves, like you said, and other women. So yeah. But what are some like statistics about women who attend and graduate, specifically women's colleges?
That's a great question. I'm sure it's no surprise to you that we are a minority. We're a huge minority. In fact, of female college graduates, because of college graduates, it's statistically irrelevant, but of female college graduates, women's college graduates only take up 2% of the graduate population. And yet, graduates of women's colleges comprise over 20% of women in Congress and 30% of this Business Week list of the top female executives. And I don't think that that's a coincidence. I do think that this is a place where women can find their voices and become leaders. Some famous women's college graduates certainly includes Hillary Clinton. Probably most famously, she was the first female nominee of a major presidential party. The first CEO of a Fortune 500 company went to a women's college. That's Katherine Graham, probably most famous for her investigation into Watergate. And then more recently, there are folks like Elaine Chao. She directed the Peace Corps. She was the former Secretary of Labor. If you like the band Japanese Breakfast Club, Michelle Zauner is the lead singer. And I can't help but brag on a woman who I graduated with, actually. Forbes 30 Under 30, the great Jordan Castile, who is a MacArthur Fellow and, of course, is most famous for her portrait of Barack Obama. So women's college graduates are all around us, even though we're just a tiny fraction of folks who have attended and graduated from college.
Yeah, that is amazing. I didn't know, honestly, any of that. And I had never heard of that band before, but I really, really like Japanese culture. I'm actually part Japanese. I know I don't look like it, but my grandmother is 100%, you know.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I'll totally look up that band.
They're fantastic. If you like alternative rock, mm-hmm. they're so good. Japanese Breakfast Club.
Totally. I was a teenager in the 90s. Of course I like alt rock. Like, it's kind of my jam.
This is not a sponsorship, but Japanese Breakfast Club, Japanese Breakfast Club. Go check them out.
Awesome. I totally will. I love that. Yeah. So like what happens when we, you know, place women in a classroom and men aren't there, their presence is removed?
You know, something that's wild that I encounter a lot is that there are women college graduates who attended a school that was like 80% female, and they say it was like I went to a women's college. But there was this study in 2014 in the Journal of Life Sciences Education that found that even when men are massively outnumbered to the degree of 80-20, they still tend to raise their hands first. They tend to dominate the conversation. They tend to interrupt. And it is a true co-ed experience unless they are completely, totally, 100% removed from the conversation. And when that happens, an interesting thing occurs with the women in the room. Not all of the women become dominant, but folks who would not otherwise speak up, not otherwise be leaders, learn to find their voice, and they get comfortable with themselves and become comfortable being the center of attention. And I do think that that's why there are so many famous alumni from women's colleges, is that you learn to stand on your own, and it's no longer a performance. It's just about your ideas, and it's just about what you have to say. So I think removing this competitive nature that male students tend to bring to the table, not all of them, but they do tend to bring it, creates a space where it is safe to try out your ideas and fail and succeed, and earn that confidence over time.
Yeah, I love that you brought up competition. I have had some stuff happen to me this year that I can't talk about specifically on the show. But men who, you know, I'm a very public person. I'm liked in the industry. I'm a role model. I take that seriously. I have been attacked by men because of it, because of that competition. And I can tell you from years of therapy, that type of competition is very bad for your mental health, for the person who sees me as competition. Like, the only person that you're competing against is yourself, your past self. So whenever I see these men get so, you know, huffy and upset that I'm achieving these amazing things, I'm just like, it is not a competition. Why are you making it? But that's just like the male culture. Mm-hmm. It's what they're always taught. They have to be the strongest, the best, and all of that. Let's just not even talk about the toxic masculinity that affects men's mental health as well. But yeah, in the classroom, like, it affects us because, like you said, we don't have a voice. And for me, what I observe a lot with men, they will talk over you. And not only will they talk over you, but they won't let you assert your opinion. They won't allow you time to respond. You know, the classic thing with that is at the end of a meeting where you've had something to say during the whole meeting and you've had your hand raised on Zoom and everything, and your manager gives you the last like 90 seconds. To talk about your thing. I cannot tell you how many times that's happened. And after a while, I started to say, you know what? Let's put that on the agenda first for next time. So It's my tip for ladies. I'm sorry, I went off on a tangent.
No, you know what? Honestly, I think that that's great advice, because getting interrupted and having my ideas rephrased as a male colleague's idea, that happens to me quite frequently, is frustrating. And so creating space for you to speak first, I actually think that that's excellent advice.
Yeah, absolutely. It took me many years to come up with that. But after I did, you know, I won't say that that practice is, 100% successful, because a lot of people will just be like, well, you know, we have a whole minute left. Go ahead and talk now. And I'm just like, what I have to say is going to take more than a minute, you know, and it is very disrespectful to expect me to get my point across in 1 minute when you've been talking about nothing for an hour, like literally nothing, nothing important, nothing that anybody cares about, you know? Anyway, I'm sorry. I need to rein myself in.
I mean, I get passionate about it too.
Yeah. I literally started this podcast as I was going through therapy, because I was like, I think that we all need to talk about these things. So this podcast is very cathartic for me in my journey towards good mental health. I just want to be okay.
Well, and I think it's really important. I mean, obviously, to carve out these spaces for women's voices, because we don't talk about these things. And I think part of the systemic problems of women in tech is that because we don't talk about these things, we all have to solve these problems alone, and it can feel really isolating. And there's no good resource to say, my boss keeps interrupting me. How do I deal with that, power dynamic? And the only way that we can address it is talking about it. So thank you for starting Tierras in Tech.
Yeah, I always tell people my life did not start until I put on my tiara.
Like, oh, I love that.
Your audience will always tell you like what they want. And the first tech conference where I wore a tiara, they were just like, yeah, this is definitely going to be a thing. Yeah, so talking... And thank you for sort of segueing into the next topic. The systemic issues that face us every single day, every job that we get, what have you observed? Obviously, you kind of already shared a little bit, but just expand on that.
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest, everything stems from one big systemic issue. I don't think that this is unique to tech, but I think that tech hasn't faced pressure to solve this problem, is that the default employee is male. Mm-hmm. And because the default employee is male, women are seen as men with a disability called a uterus. We have the uterus problem. We have this thing that makes us bleed, that makes us cry, that makes us get pregnant. And I think that organizations tend to see women as a risky hire. If they're young, are they going to get pregnant? If they're older, are they going to be really volatile in the boardroom because they're facing menopause? And this problem happens implicitly a lot, but also explicitly. I remember one of my first interviews when I was going into consulting. It's one-on-one with a man. I'm 23 years old, and he says, do you expect to have a family in the next 2 years? Totally illegal question, totally unacceptable to ask me. But at the same time, because it's one-on-one, there's no recording, it's a closed door, who am I going to bring that to? There's no one there to help. And so when it's explicit like that, all you can do is get angry, and nothing will come of it. Or when it's implicit, sometimes you don't know that it's there until it's years after the fact. And that's really tough. And I think one of the solutions that I've seen that is a terrible solution is to pretend that you don't have a uterus. I never hear my female colleagues taking time off because of their menstrual cramps. Never hear it. I do hear about mental health days. I look side to side at my peers, who again are so important, and I include myself in this camp. Most of us in our 30s, I'm 33, don't have kids. And the women who were in tech and have had kids have dropped out of tech. Mm-hmm. They're working part-time somewhere else. So pretending to not have a uterus, yes, it works, but that can be a total upheaval of what you think your life is going to be, and really it shouldn't be. So I really don't think tech is built to support its female employees. It's built in a way that there's an expectation to pretend that you don't have this extra chromosome. It rewards folks who act more like men, which is really unfortunate.
Yeah. Let's talk about our periods. I have never addressed this on the show. I have horrible periods. Mm. I always have. My cramps are terrible. My flow is terrible. I would be sitting on a towel on a Zoom call with a client, acting like everything's okay. I'm sitting on a towel, gushing blood, you know, and I can feel that.
Right.
Like, just talking to, we should absolutely be able to not have to work while that's happening. Of course, you know, it's a different experience for everyone. Some people have really easy periods and like light, but for, I think most of us, it's like we're sick that whole week. Yeah.
Well, and I think it's one of those things where solutions for a particular woman's problem, like a period, right? It would be great to have a day off a month. For me, the first day or the day before, right? That would also be great for everyone. The person who deals with migraines, having a day set aside a month for dealing with a migraine, that helps that person too. Mm-hmm. For the person who has a sick grandmother who, you know, you want to take a day to take her to all of her doctor's appointments, it helps that person too. So, yeah. You know, I think it can be framed as a woman's problem, but the inflexibility is everyone's problem.
Exactly. We need real flexible schedules. Like, I don't care when you do your work. Mm-hmm. I care that it's turned in on time.
Preach.
I care that it's quality. You can stay up all night if you want. Like, I really, really don't care. And I think trying to put people in this very rigid schedule, this 9-to-5 that has existed since the industrial age, you know, that was built for men, mm-hmm. by men. Mm-hmm. That is not what we need anymore. That's not appropriate, because that was built at a time when a man worked and a woman stayed home. So they both had a full-time job. I'm telling you, housewives, that is a career decision.
Ma'am.
You are allowed to want to be a housewife. You know, I am not here to prescribe to anybody what they should be. But like, that fact, and that now two people have a full-time job and you're supposed to have kids on top of that, and maternity leave is classified as disability. Not a good like support system for women to actually have a life, mm-hmm. of their own.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's take a quick little break. I have a segment that I like to call Precious Gems. This is where I take comments and questions from people on social media. And today's comes from Instagram. I think I've used Instagram for most of these lately. But the quote that the person was responding to was from the amazing Chloe Condon. And she said, finding a community and a mentor is really important. And remember, it's okay to cry. I got through boot camp on tears and code. I love that.
I love that too.
Yeah. So the comment, the response to that was from Andy.webdeveloper on Instagram. And they say, a mentor is indeed required to pave our path. Nice one. Absolutely. Agreed. That is necessary, I think. Yeah. Alrighty. back to this. Yeah, so I actually picked that precious gem because our next topic was, why is it important for women to have female mentors?
Such a good question. I think women should have female mentors because there are women-specific problems that need answering. As we touched on, like, the importance of this podcast, things like, should you change your last name if you're married? How will it affect your reputation if you're a woman and you ask for a raise after 6 months? Or how should you handle telling your boss that you're pregnant? These are women-specific questions that have been solved before, but because men are the default in the workforce, there's no good research to find the answers except for lived experiences of those who have gone through it before. And that tends to be women. Unfortunately, women are 28% less likely than men to say that they have a strong network, and they tend to report feeling excluded. And that's really unfortunate because they have to put a lot of thinking power into solving these unique gender-related issues. And they shouldn't have to. These problems have been solved before. There should be a good resource, and often that is a person who's been through it before, who you can reach up to.
Absolutely. I have a very large group of mentors, and that is another thing I always tell people. You should have multiple.
Yes.
You know, you shouldn't only have one. You should take inspiration from each person because we're all individuals. I've definitely had people who were like obsessed with me and were trying to be me exactly. And I'm just like, I mean, my lived experiences are different from yours. You know, like I stutter, and that has shaped a lot of my, you know, internal ableism and internal misogyny, you know, but yeah, it's important to understand that you're not alone, I think. Yeah.
And someone's done it before.
Someone has done it before, so it's always. Yeah, absolutely. It's possible. Reach for the stars. And people often ask me if tech is so horrible towards women, why don't I just switch industries? Every industry is horrible towards women.
Yes.
So just at least with tech, you can work from home.
With
so
tech,
you can shut that out.
With tech, you can work from home and you get a decent salary.
Oh, more than decent. Yeah.
Much easier.
Yeah. My favorite TikTok right now, there's a lady who's like, you know, crying and she's like, I don't have a husband. I don't have kids. And she's like wiping her tears with money. I thought that was really cute.
That's great.
Yeah. But it's just this system that exists to make us think that there's this track for life and that you have to do all of these steps. We're living to be like 100 now. So honestly, do what you want because life is long. It's not a sprint.
Yes.
It is a marathon at this point. Yeah, so speaking of mentors and support overall, how can people meet people in the industry and cultivate a network of support?
I like to think of networking as an 80-20 formula. I think it is important to meet a lot of people, but when I look at my network, which is probably a couple hundred folks, there are really only 10 people who are regularly checking up on me, asking, can I help you with your career? Can I coach you on this thing? Hey, there's a job over here, come apply to it. So I do think that it's important to, you know, do the traditional things, right? Reach out for informational interviews, go to networking events, go to events in general. I think especially post-COVID, folks are eager to get out, and more senior people are going to events. So I think that that's a great opportunity right now. But to also take the time to identify the folks that are most likely to help you and then deepen those relationships. So it is a quality conversation after you have the quantity to make that selection. I also think it's really important. I imagine that a lot of folks who are listening are already in tech and are looking to get ahead. I think that deepening your relationship with your peers can have a surprising upside. I think, or at least I should say, in my own experience, folks who have reported to me have also pulled me up in different positions. I've had folks who I've graduated with who have gone on to win these amazing awards and who can help me now but couldn't help me 5 years ago. So look not just up who's already achieved, but who has the potential to achieve, and build that partnership so that you folks can both climb that ladder together.
Yeah, I love that. The most important thing I tell people, stay in touch with people. People that you have met at conferences or worked with. Like I still talk to people that I worked with like 15, 20 years ago. I actually just had a conversation with somebody that I hadn't talked to in like 12 years, but it's just that you never know what will happen. You could need help in a specific area, and a person who was just starting to like learn a certain skill could be an expert now and could help you now. So always keep in touch with people that you meet over the years, and that will definitely build your network. I've got thousands of people on LinkedIn at this point, and I do try to answer most messages. Just don't message me hello. Tell me what you want.
Yeah. Or hello, will you buy my product? That's the worst.
Yeah. There's this whole like etiquette piece too, that I'm actually writing a course that includes that currently, because online etiquette with professionals, I think, needs to be addressed a little bit. I get a lot of messages where people just ask me to promote their stuff for free, and I don't know them, and I'm just like, that get to know me first, promote my stuff first, and then I will see you, and then I will promote your stuff.
That expectation of free labor for content creators is just mind-blowing to me. I think folks don't realize just how much work it is to produce something like a podcast or run a blog or create a show on YouTube. So good, charge them a lot, and ignore the ones who won't pay.
I mean, it isn't even just people, it's actual companies. Like recruitment companies ask me to do this all the time. I had one that wanted me to do a series of TikToks, like 5 to 7 TikToks, without paying me. I was like, TikToks, like you don't just hit record. At least I don't. I plan stuff ahead of time, and I'll like try to have like a script or something. I'm not the kind of person that just turns on my, especially if it's for someone else, if it's to promote someone else's brand, like not gonna just do that on the fly. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, so let's talk about, how do we get more women interested in tech?
So I'm going to twist this question a little bit, because I do think that there is generally interest. And I think there's been a lot of focus at the top of the funnel. I think folks like Girls Who Code are doing great work. I think that colleges are partnering with some enterprise companies and purposefully recruiting young women, young recent graduates. And I mean, there's not parity yet, but I think at the top of the funnel, that's work outside of my hands, right? That there's very little that I can do about getting folks in. the question that I'm trying to answer right now, and I certainly don't have all the answers, is how do we get women to stay in tech past 30?
That's a good question.
Yeah, because I think it's really easy when you're a 20-something to prioritize your career. But as you get older, you could choose to become a mom or not. You could choose to get married or not. And these life questions of who are you and who do you want to be, it stems outside of work. But that doesn't mean that your career should be over and that you shouldn't still be aggressive about your career if that's where you want it to be. So I think that in order to get women to stay, we do have to solve this uterus problem, where if you have a child, the ramifications should be equal regardless of your sex. So no more maternal leave or maternity leave. It should be family leave. Mm-hmm. I think that flexible work environments, like we were talking about before, sure, you can be off work for your 8-week-old child, but when they're 4 months, they still need a ton of attention. I think that should be part of the package. I think childcare should be just naturally part of a compensation package. And if you're not taking it, then that should be a supplemental part of your pay. Systemically in tech, one thing that I'm really looking at and that I put pressure on my own investors is that only 2.4% of VC funding goes to female founders. And I think that that's totally egregious and contributes to women leaving tech, because when they look up, it's really important to see folks who have succeeded, and there's no one to look up to. There are very, very few women to look up to, especially in the startup world. So I think it's on VCs to find those women worth investing in and doing it loudly. And that's something that I would really like to see in the next 10 years.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can tell you in my experience, I have managed people from multiple countries. In Europe, the family leave is both parents. Mm-hmm. It is for 1 year.
Awesome.
Both parents getting paid for 1 year to take time off and have children. That is what we need here. 3 months of disability leave because you've had a child is not the right message to send to either parent. And then on top of that, men don't get time off. So everything is up to the woman. The woman has to have the child. The woman has to stay out of work. What if the woman went back to work a little bit earlier and the husband or partner stayed home and took care of the child? I actually know people in Europe, couples who operate like that, where the woman has the kid, like, okay, cool. You know, like, I'm all right to work now. And the husband stays home and forms a lasting bond with that child. Like, as American fathers generally don't even have that opportunity early on. Yeah. That's my soapbox.
I mean, I think that one of the lingering reasons why women remain the primary caregiver is because of the setup of maternity leave.
Absolutely. Yeah. It is this idea here of keeping the dream of our past culture where women were subservient and stayed home, and we had these shows that just showed this idyllic society that never existed. Not every woman was happy staying home. There were a lot of lesbians who, you know, had to pretend not to be. There was alcoholism and addiction because women were just living a life for someone else. Mm. So I think that a lot of that is culture. A lot of that is, you know, support from the actual government, mm-hmm. and making laws that, you know, first of all, allow us to have autonomy over our bodies, but also support. Yeah. Because, like, Florida is where I am now. I have to get a new prescription every time I get my birth control refilled.
That's wild.
So I can't have refills anymore. I have to get a brand new prescription every single time.
And that has that problem seeps not just into your personal life, but into your professional life as well. That's doctor's appointments. That's time driving back and forth. And that's money that you have to pay to doctors that men don't have to pay, your copay. And then it's a prescription that you're not guaranteed month to month. That's ridiculous. Yep.
Just because I am married doesn't mean I want to have kids. I actually can't have kids. Mm. So the pills I take are to help me not have kids, because if I had kids, I would probably die. Oof. Like, yeah. So it's just like, come on, people. Nothing is black and white. Nothing, you know, everything is very complex and nuanced. And so we can't just pass these blanket laws that don't support really anything, honestly. Yeah.
Does a lot more harm than good.
Absolutely. So what advice do you have for women who are interested in tech?
For the folks just entering the workforce or who are just looking to break in, I don't care if you're a writer, if you're good at math, if you are good at art, if you're a people person, if you're a problem solver, there's a role for you. I think that tech gets equated to computer science. And I think that, of course, there are a lot of engineers in tech. We need engineers. But there are lots of other roles where if you don't have that programming skill, that you can still use as an entry point. And so I can't tell you every single one-to-one. You love the skill. You want to spend 60% of your time doing it. You want to apply for this position. But I can tell you that there are people who do know the answers to that. And that's where your network and your work with other women who are in tech comes in to help find that parity. And then for women who are in tech and are looking for their next role, or want to stay in tech and they're thinking about leaving, I do think that when you evaluate a company, it's really important to look for female board members and women who are in upper and middle management, because that is proof of success. Women have been at this company and they've been promoted or they've been hired in to have a high impact role, and they will likely be your champions. So I think that that's really important. I do have to brag on Allstax, which is where I work, just for a second, because part of the reason why I joined this company was because they loudly advertise that they have family leave. Men and women both get to leave for kids. And of their exec board, a lot of these folks have been through fertility treatments, so they have a deep understanding of women who are interested in having kids and what that investment looks like. So a lot of these men are taking time off to pick up their kids from work, and a lot of these men are taking time off to work with a kid with a reading disability. So I think that they're setting the example for the women in the company to be able to take that time off. And when it comes from the men first, it becomes easier for the women if they want to have kids or not. And of course, having visible women leadership doesn't hurt either. So I think Allstax is a great example of a company that not just advertises to women and has a lot of, white women eating salads on their website, but having the male support that goes along with supporting women in the workforce.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, Allstax, congratulations for having a amazing company. I actually have never really heard of any company that had leave for men too, but that is
it's really fully paid.
It's important. Yeah. I can tell you from a person, like I own a business, that type of thing, there are no tax breaks for that or any kind of government support. So that comes out of just profit. So that is an amazing choice because your profits will increase if you support your employee base is my thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think we have such good employee engagement and employee satisfaction. Check us out on Glassdoor because they really do treat folks as whole people, and profit is important. Mm-hmm. You know, we're a company. We're here to win. We have a great product, and we also treat people like people. And I think that that's why we continue to be such high achievers.
That's awesome. I wish that I could talk to you all day about this. I am, you know, solidly on my soapbox, but I am cognizant of your time. So before I let you go, can you tell people where to connect online with you?
Sure. So I am, again, Rachel Berger, the Director of Marketing at Allstacks. You can find me on LinkedIn. It's Rachel, R-A-C-H-E-L, M-W Berger with a U. So Rachel M-W Berger is my handle on LinkedIn. Or you can send me an email. It's rachel.berger@allstacks.com. I do have to mention that we are hiring. We would love to have Women's College alums and non-alums alike. So come check out what we're looking for.
Awesome. Yeah. And I will have links to all of that in the show notes / description. Rachel, thank you so much. This was great.
Thank you so much, Shelley. This was a delight.
If you want to support us, please like, subscribe, and share this episode with your fellow gems. Let me know in the comments what other topics you would like me to cover, and follow TRs in Tech on social media and use the hashtag #MakeYourselfShine. Thanks for watching or listening, and have a great day.